Hey, we got a jam-packed show for you here at the Curvy Critic. We got a little Lady and the Tramp. We got some Fords and some Ferraris. Ooh, and we got some scandalous documentary. You don't want to miss it. Stay right there.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hi, everybody. It is your girl, Carla Renata, a.k.a. The Curvy Critic, here at Black Hollywood Live for episode, I believe, 86 of The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata right here on the BHL. So if this is your first time joining me, please take a moment to give me a big old thumbs up and subscribe to the notifications and the channel so that you can get the notices about the show. This is how we break it down at The Curvy Critic. We talk about some news, we talk about some reviews, we sprinkle it with a little interview here and there, but I couldn't do it without you. So please, please, please take the time and the opportunity to let me know how you feel, let me know what you want to see, and follow your girl over at thecurvyfilmcritic.com. I'm on Rotten Tomatoes. And of course, I'm right here at Black Hollywood Live serving you every Sunday at 5 p.m. So let me tell you how my weekend went. And I have my glasses on today for those that are watching YouTube because your girl is tired. My eyes are so tired, I can barely keep them open. I talk about this all the time, that this is that time of the year that is award season here in L.A. So it is just off and popping. There was one day that I went to like 3 parties. I did 6 junkets in 3 days. It has just been crazy. But I have some great interviews coming up for you guys in the future with the entire cast of Frozen. I did the filmmakers. I talked to the composers. And I did that all for EUR Web, who assigned me to that. And I also got assigned by Shadow and Act to do some interviews with the cast of 21 Bridges, including Black Panther himself, Chadwick Boseman. But today, we got a special interview with Miss Janelle Monae and her composer collaborators, Nate and Roman, who helped her reinvent some of the music that you're going to hear on the live action Lady and the Tramp when it debuts on Disney Plus on 11/12, November 12th, which is this week. I cannot wait. I'm so excited. I've been checking out all the Disney Plus stuff because, you know, as a press person, they let us see stuff a little early so we can review it to get people to watch it or not, depending on how somebody felt about it. But I'm getting my entire life. I feel like I will never leave my house again. It's so sad. I want to give Read, Love, and Listen and Michael B a shout out in the chat room. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate you. I always love to see you here. And we're going to go ahead and get right into it. Y'all, this movie called The Report. Oh, it is a film that is starring Adam Driver. And Adam Driver, by the way, is having a really good year. He has this film out. He also has Marriage Story with Scarlett Johansson. And I have an interview with her coming up soon, too. So I'm getting all the good people. I'm so excited. Not that the other people are bad, but, you know, I get excited because I'm not CNN. I'm not Good Morning America. I'm not ET or Access or Extra. I'm The Curvy Critic. So the fact that the publicists and the studios and the talent are willing to let me speak to them speaks volumes to my character and my reputation in this lane. And I wholeheartedly appreciate them and all of the opportunities that I've been given. But back to The Report. It is produced by Amazon Studios and it stars Annette Bening, Adam Driver, and John Hamm. It's a political movie, which, you know, dealing with the politics that we deal with in real life, do we really need to see another political movie? Yes, we do. And this is the one you want to see because it deals with an idealistic Senate staffer named Daniel J. Jones, who has been tasked by his bosses to lead on the investigation into a CIA post of 9/11 detention and interrogation programs. And he uncovers some really shocking things. Adam Driver is top form in this movie, and so is Annette Bening. It's based on a true story. Annette Bening is playing Senator Dianne Feinstein right here from California. And I'm just going to give you a FYI, but not really, story about Senator Feinstein. When the housing crisis was going crazy and people were losing their homes at rapid fire rate. I was one of those people that might have been in that situation. And I would, you know, whenever I would see a news story about it, they were like, write your senators, write your congresspeople, write anybody that you can to help you. So I did. I wrote Dianne Feinstein and I wrote Barbara Boxer. And those two women were absolutely instrumental with their guidance and their advice and their knowing the law in the state of California in regards to owning property helped me save my home. So I will be forever grateful. So that's my personal story in dealing with the world of politics. But this film, The Report, was really good. It's a little long, as most of the films I see are. It's a little long, but these performances in this film are top-notch. They are really quite spectacular, and you don't want to miss it. Again, this is The Report by Amazon Studios, and it opens on November 15th. Most of the films that I talk about today will be opening this week, so it's a really jam-packed week, like I said, but there's one that isn't, and I'll tell you which one when I get to it. Next up is Ford versus Ferrari. Now, I own a Ford Mustang, so, you know, when they said it was a movie about Ford versus Ferrari, I was all in because I go see anything that has to do with the Mustang. I've seen every documentary on the Mustang. I've seen every feature film on a Mustang, and I kind of like race car movies. It gives me a kind of adrenaline into something that I wanted to do when I was younger but didn't have the courage to do it because I never saw girls doing it, and I certainly didn't see anybody of color doing it, even though there were some people out there doing it that were males that were people of color, but I never saw any females doing it. So it was one of those pipe dreams that I kind of like put on the back burner. But this is produced by 20th Century Fox. It stars Matt Damon and Christian Bale, and that's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. Matt Damon and Christian Bale. What else do you need in a movie and race cars? I'm just saying. But it deals with the American car designer Carroll Shelby and his driver Ken Miles. So Matt Damon's playing Carroll Shelby and Ken Miles is being played by Christian Bale. And they have a corporate battle with the Ford Mustang. Basically, what was happening was the Ferrari came onto the scene in like 1966, I want to say, and it was upsetting everything. And Ford was the first American car that was doing really well here in America, but they didn't have a sports car. They didn't have anything fast. All of the cars that they had were, you know, what would be considered like mom wagons or something like that. And it was they were considered a family franchise, a family car. They were very heavily identified with family. And then here comes Ferrari with this fast, slick, sleek looking car, and it was causing Ford sales to go down. So they were like, yo, we gotta come up with something that's gonna give them a run for their money. And they actually tried to buy Ferrari and were unsuccessful in that. But this is that story about that battle against Ford versus Ferrari, thus the title of the film. The race sequences are really quite exhilarating. I love race movies. Can I say that enough? I love race movies. They're exhilarating. They're hella fun to watch. Matt Damon and Christian Bale are giving some very nuanced, very spectacular type character performances. But again, this was another film that ran a little long for me. And I this is a recurring theme for me. I've said this here before. Most of the films that I have seen, they're okay, but the performances by the actors in it and the production design and the costume design and the sound is really on point. But sometimes for me, the screenplays and the films themselves don't kind of come up to where the talent is. And that's how I felt about Ford versus Ferrari. I'm kind of in the minority on that one. I've spoken to a lot of my fellow film critics along the way about it, and they all love it. I don't know what was wrong with me on this one because I said I love race car movies, but this one just kind of didn't do it for me. But go see it for yourself when it opens, produced by 20th Century Fox, again on November 15th. Now, I saw this documentary. It's called Scandalous. And I was like, what could this possibly be about? Because there was another movie called Scandalous, but it was dealing with the whole Harvey Weinstein thing. And I didn't really want to watch that. Hate to say that, but I kind of didn't. I see enough of it on the news. I don't need to spend 2 hours of my life watching a documentary about Harvey Weinstein. But having said that, I go to look up the Scandalous documentary, and I come to find out that it's not about Harvey Weinstein. It's actually about the National Enquirer. And I realized I knew very little about the National Enquirer. Did you know anything about the National Enquirer? Because I sure didn't know anything about it. And I was flabbergasted and shocked, to say the least. I was like, oh my God, what's going on? I just want to give a shout out to Jenna James. What's up, girl? I did not know that. First of all, I didn't know that the home of the National Enquirer, was in Lantana, Florida. Isn't that such a random place to have the National Enquirer? Like, you would think it would be in New York or LA or Chicago, and this is the dealio. So this documentary is basically the history of the National Enquirer, how it became this big tabloid and how it eventually met its demise, right? So it basically was the New York Enquirer, which was a really small newspaper daily in New York City. And the guy that owned it, his name is Gene Pope. And he was, allegedly Gene Pope was kind of tied in with the mafia. So he asked his dad to buy the New York Enquirer for him because he wanted to run a newspaper. So his dad did, and they moved it to Florida, and they started doing some things. And his father got the money from mafia boss Costello. So that was interesting. I'm like, okay. Everybody that was interviewed that talked about the National Enquirer, they said the working there was exciting, crazy, and it was controlled chaos. And they showed footage of everybody in the National Enquirer newsroom, and they talked about how they went about getting their stories. And they said that this was the thing that really struck me. They said that they were saucy stories that spared no detail and went for the jugular. They were unorthodox in gaining stories. The National Enquirer also was the first newspaper to post about O.J. Simpson. And remember those Bruno Mali shoes? So if you remember the O.J. Simpson case, there was all this drama. There was drama about two things that he wore: the gloves and the Bruno Mali shoes. Those ugly black, brown, whatever color they were, Bruno Mali shoes. Well, the National Enquirer had picked up a photograph of O.J. Simpson wearing those shoes. And that is what broke that case wide open and eventually resulted in National Enquirers having to go. That was the first time they had to go to court to testify against the person that was being the person that had been arrested and was being tried for the crime. That was the first time the National Enquirer had ever been called into court in a positive light. Because, honey, they would get sued all the time for the scandalous stories they would write about numerous celebrities like Whitney Houston, Carol Burnett, Oprah Winfrey. They said that Oprah sold hella papers. It went through various different incarnations of ownership. There was one black person, a woman of color named Pat Shipp, who pitched many stories that never saw the light of day. They talked about how when Gene Pope found out that people were leaving the building to go to lunch, he brought in a big old spread, like the kind of spread you would get on a cruise ship to keep people in the building, to keep them working. It's quite fascinating, this documentary is. And it really brings up the question of, when was that time that news became a place where there was a very thin line between tabloid news and mainstream reporting, mainstream journalism? The National Enquirer is really responsible for making those lines blurred. And it brings to light this question: does the press have the right to intrude on your privacy? The National Enquirer believed that they did. They believed that the public had a right to know, and that it was their job to report and let us know what was going on in people's lives, because they felt like, as a regular citizen, we're always fascinated with celebrity. We want to know what they wear. We want to know what they eat. We want to know where they work out. We want to know what kind of workout they're doing. We want to know who they're dating. We want to know when they broke up, who they married, who they divorced, what their kids look like. People are obsessed with celebrity in this country. So the National Enquirer provided a service in that respect. But in 2018, the National Enquirer was sold. And it was sold because, get this, they found out that there were stories being killed in order to boost up the profile of Donald Trump. They said that Donald Trump would actually call up in there pretending to be somebody else to pitch them stories on himself. Just let that sink in for a second. But I'm going to read this for you while you're thinking about that. In 2018, the feds granted immunity to David Pecker and the AMI who bought out the National Enquirer for admitting that the National Enquirer made illegal payments to influence the 2016 presidential election of Donald Trump. In 2019, AMI announced the sale of the National Enquirer to two sister publications, which to this day remain anonymous, for $100 million, a price considered really strong and high for the simple fact that this scandal had the scandal-ridden tabloid was at the had its lowest circulation in history in 2019. The filmmaker Mark Lanzman reached out to David Pecker and other AMI reps for comment, but they did not participate in the documentary and they declined. So that, again, you guys, the documentary is called Scandalous. It's directed by Mark Lanzman. It's produced by CNN Films, and it will be out on November 15th. Ooh, boy. That was a lot to say. I know it was. I know y'all are crazy. Y'all are like, what's going on? Michael B. Inquiring minds want to know. Well, clearly they did until 2019 when the National Enquirer shuttered. They don't want to know that much anymore. I think I've still seen it on some newsstands, though, which is kind of funny that I've seen it on newsstands and it doesn't really exist any longer. All right. So I've been talking a lot about Apple TV here. A lot about Apple TV and all this programming that they're doing. And we had Yvette Nicole Brown here a little while ago. She was talking about, she was here to talk about her film that she wrote and produced and starred in called Always a Bridesmaid. But she's also starring in the Lady and the Tramp live action version for Disney Plus, which will debut on November 12th. I had the opportunity to see that. I had never seen the Lady and the Tramp. I purposely didn't see the cartoon first because I wanted to just feel what my feelings were going to be watching this live action version. And I kind of dug the live action version. It was really good. I enjoyed it very much. But thanks to Disney Plus, big shout out and pump fist to y'all. They provided me an opportunity to speak with Janelle Monáe. I love me some Janelle Monáe. She's one of my favorite recording artists. And I told her when I met her yesterday that I've seen every film she's been in, and I feel like she's a very naturally gifted actress, and she just seems to get better and better with each role. It's such a pleasure to watch her grow on film, and I'm looking forward to other things that she's doing. But for the Lady and the Tramp, she plays Peg, this kind of one-eyed, I don't know if she's a Pekingese or a Maltese or what she is, but she's a cute little white dog. But she voices that character, and then she worked with Nate Wonder and Roman Jean Arthur to reimagine the music for The Lady and the Tramp, because there was all this controversy back in the day about the Siamese Twins song. It was considered very racist, very insensitive to Asians. And then it was also known for Peggy Lee, who was this really beautifully blonde, curvy torch singer. She sang the theme song to The Lady and the Tramp, and she was also one of the voices of the Siamese cats. And this time around, it's Janelle Monáe. So I want you guys to take a listen to this interview with Janelle and Nate and Roman, and then I'll be back in a few.
Curvy,
I'm
crazy. Love.
Yes, I'm the curvy critic. Oh my goodness, you guys. What was the very first Disney classic you ever saw, and how did it make you feel?
That's a hard one.
No.
I think Fantasia, probably.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah.
I think the first one I saw might have been Lady and the Tramp. Might have been, actually.
Really?
Or like Peter Pan. Yeah, one of those.
Yeah. Peter Pan was my first one, too. Yeah, scared amazing. The hell out of me. Mm-hmm. It did. Yeah. It scared me half to death.
Yeah.
So, in general, do you guys identify more with the Lady or more with the Tramp?
The Tramp.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like to have adventures.
Okay. How about you, Roman?
It's weird to identify with the Tramp, but yeah, he gets around town more.
He got personality, though.
Yeah, and isn't a more, I think it's a more endearing, like, you know, it wouldn't be an arc of a film if the lady just stayed in her yard the whole time.
So. That's true, yeah. That's true. Speaking of personality, Peg got personality, plus she's savvy, she's smart. I'm not sure if she got one eye or she's just having a fashion statement with her hair over her eye.
You don't know, see? You just don't know.
out yours right now?
You know, really?
Yeah,
exactly. Okay, hold on.
There you go. Boom, boom.
This is my page.
She's a fashion icon.
Ow. Let's talk about That's Enough. I love that song.
It's amazing, right?
I love that song.
We're talking with these guys.
It kind of reminds me of, you know that song, Sessy Bone?
Oh, yes.
It reminds me a little bit of Sessy Bone, like that 1930-ish kind of style.
I love.
How did you guys come up with that style and that song for this feature?
Well, we wanted the song to fit into the rest of the film. Mm-hmm.
Timeless.
So originally, when we came up with it, it had more of a like kind of Sinatra kind of vibe. But you know, basically, what it is like, you know, you're trying to write a classic song, trying to make it fit into what is I think is a beautiful message, mm-hmm. which is about, you know, no matter where you kind of come from, you can find happiness, and it doesn't matter if you have a lot of things. If you find it with somebody, that relationships are ultimately the most important thing. So, you know, there's so many classic songs in the canon of American music, period, or French music.
And even specifically in Disney music.
Specifically in Disney music that find that, you know, it's fun to write standards.
This is Disney. So Disney has a very specific style, a very specific sound, a very specific vibe. Did you find that hindered your writing or creating the song in any way? And this
not
is
at all.
It excited it.
Yeah,
it's excited
it. Yeah.
I think if you listen, because we've worked together in the past a lot, if you've listened to albums like The Arc Android, if you've listened to, you know, Metropolis, Electric Lady, all of the stuff we've worked on to their projects, you'll see that there is a connection between just like the string arrangements even that Disney would use in their music, like the orchestral pieces that you'd hear. It was like a soundtrack narrating life, and we always played in that space.
Yeah.
And so to be called by them because they heard past work and they're like, we really think this is the one we can work on, was just a dream.
Well, I thank you so much for taking time to speak to me. I appreciate you wholeheartedly, and good luck with
you. Thank you.
I love the fact that they just kept calling me the Kirby Critic. They were so excited about that. And I love that they gave me some applause. They gave Sister a applause. So clap, clap, clap. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you so much. They gave me some applause and I was so excited. I'm like, oh, they really liked the interview. You know, when I do these interviews, I love doing them. They're so much fun. I love doing them so much. I just want to sit and have a conversation. I don't want it to be, let me ask you a question and now you answer it. You know, that's so like, I don't even have the words for that. But I really do just like sitting down, having a conversation and just seeing what comes out of it organically. You know, I will prep and prepare some things going into it, but I kind of just like to see where it goes organically. And then if I get stuck, I'll go back to what I prepared. But Janelle Monáe was lovely. And that outfit she had on was everything. Nate's dreadlocks were popping and hopping, and Roman and Nate are brothers, and the three of them collaborate on stuff all the time. So if you have some Janelle Monáe music, go and check your liner notes, because Nate and Roman are on there with her. They wrote a song called That's Enough, which plays in the end credits. They redid the whole Siamese song within the Lady and the Tramp, which kind of had like this jazz kind of New Orleans-ish kind of vibe. It was popping. I really liked it. I liked the fact that they switched up the music. It was very like one of the young men was saying, had a very Parisian-ish kind of feel to it. So check out the Lady and the Tramp when Disney Plus starts streaming on November 12th. Tessa Thompson is doing the voice of the lady, and Justin Theroux is doing the voice of the tramp. Sam Elliott is playing Trusty. He's hysterical. My girl Janelle Monáe is playing Peg. And of course, my ride or die friend Yvette Nicole Brown is playing Aunt Sarah. Oh, and she is just as deliciously dastardly as she wants to be. I love this role for her. It was great. Good job, my sister. Good job. All right. So moving on to the next one. Charlie's Angels is produced by Columbia Pictures, and it is written, directed, and starring Elizabeth Banks. I love me some Elizabeth Banks. Elizabeth Banks is like that all... She's like that all-purpose woman. Like, she can do everything. She's hosting game shows. She's writing feature films and starring in them and directing them. And she's just kicking butt all over the place. I love her. And I think she did an excellent job directing these three women, Kristen Stewart, Naomi Scott, and Ella Balinska, in this movie. The movie starts out on such a high octane adrenaline note that I'm like, where are we going to go from there? But it sets it up perfectly. And there's some things that I can't tell you that are going to blow your mind when you see the film. But the first thing that happens is it opens with a sequence where Kristen Stewart literally is taking out a dude with her thighs wrapped around his neck, about to snap his neck. That's all you need to know about Charlie's Angels. But these girls are not victimized as women. They are strong women, because the one in the 70s and the other ones kind of had the women being not victimized, but had them being portrayed a little. They were sexy, but they were sexy to the point where they weren't being respected, kind of, sort of. And that is not the case with this 2019 reboot of Charlie's Angels. And we know we've seen it before. Drew Barrymore did a reboot and did two movies. It was her and Lucy Liu and Cameron Diaz. And Demi Moore made a cameo in one of those films. But, and of course, the 70s, the iconic 70s TV series that made a big megastar out of the now deceased Farrah Fawcett. But if you are a fan of women empowerment, if you like seeing action flicks, if you're a fan of Elizabeth Banks, you are going to get your entire life when you see Columbia Pictures' Charlie's Angels when it hits theaters on November 15th. I'm expecting it to do really nice numbers. I'll let you guys know what the numbers are when we come back. Okay, Waves, you all. This movie right here, you know, I talk about Kelvin Harrison Jr. on this show quite a bit. I'm a huge fan of his work. He has another film that's out this year called Loose, and I talked about that film on this show extensively and did interviews with him and the director for that film extensively. But this film right here, it's a very disturbing film for a variety of reasons, but basically because this is just like when Moonlight came out and when If Beale Street Can Talk came out, these were films that showed the African-American family here in the United States in a way that we've never been portrayed on the silver screen before. And this is another one, because when people talk about opiate abuse, they always assume that it's some well-to-do or middle-class family that is not a person of color that is doing it. And when I say doing it, I mean, everybody goes through pain. You know, when I was a dancer, we would dance through our 8 shows a week, no matter what kind of pains we had, because we knew we had that one day off. So we would just push and push and push to get to that one day off. But some of us, you know, we get steroid shots. Some of us would get cortisone shots, which are steroid shots. Some of us would take ice baths. Like, you know, we would do anything we could to minimize that pain and the swelling of the joints. But in this family, the father has a knee injury. He's taking opiates. His son is basically stealing the opiates from him. And when you take opiates or any kind of controlled substance, it can change your personality. And that is exactly what happens in this film. Kelvin Harrison Jr. is giving the performance of a lifetime in there. And the women in this film are no joke either. Taylor Russell is giving such a very quiet, nuanced performance that I'll be really surprised if she doesn't get any attention. And Renee Elise Goldsberry, who you guys know from winning a Tony for Hamilton for her part as one of the Shuler sisters in Hamilton. She has this scene in the courtroom, and that's all I'm going to say, because if I tell you what it is, I'm just telling you, but I don't want to do that. I want you to go see the film. But I had the opportunity to speak to all of the talent. I spoke with Alexa. I spoke with Renee. I spoke with Sterling. I spoke with Taylor, but I'm going to play both interviews. But the first one we're going to play real quick is the one that I did with Renee Elise Goldsberry and Sterling K. Brown right now.
All right, so both of you guys, okay, first of all, let me just acknowledge the fact that we know each other. What's up? Sure. What's up, fam? Okay, let me get that out the way. What? St. Louis? Broadway? Okay, so both of you guys are parents, and we live in a world where technology really controls how parents deal with their kids, right? Mm-hmm. So, and we grew up in a time where your parents knew where you were, they knew what you were doing, they knew who you were doing it with, yeah. And now with technology, that's become very challenging for parents. So how do both of you feel moving forward feel about how technology may continue to impede the relationship between parents and kids?
Somebody told me once that you give your child a phone and you lose your child. Have you heard this?
I haven't heard it, but I understand the sentiment behind it.
It's crazy. I tell my son, I'm a hypocrite because you're going to see me on my phone and I'm still not giving you a phone. And I'm not kidding. You will be the last one of all your friends.
He's 10.
He's 10.
Everybody
your
else has one.
Kids already have phones.
No.
You'll be the last one. And I said, and the only thing that's going to make this hard for me is the fact that I'm gonna find it strange that you're the only person I can't track on GPS. Hmm. Right? That if you're away from me, I can't actually get through to you, and you're like my prized possession. So that's going to be the challenge. But in terms of this movie Waves and its ability to show, you know, major dramatic things happening via social media and texting, and the way there's actually a reconciliation between the mother and the daughter over a text message, it actually shows the possibility of connection as well, and uses it dramatically in ways I don't think we've seen in film before.
No, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Like, my kids don't have phones before, so
they're little people.
They don't need no phones. They got iPads, and they get to use them intermittently, okay. Right? I think that we can't say it's an excuse for a lack of connection, even once they get them.
Yeah.
Right? It just means there's a new challenge for us as parents to ensure that we connect with our children on a one-to-one basis. I get that it's going to be a different challenge, and one that we didn't personally have to navigate
ourselves
in our youth.
Yeah.
So it's going to be new territory for us, but it doesn't mean that we can't find a way. I'm hoping for the best.
Tyler is one of those kids that looks up to his dad.
Yeah.
And his dad pushes him and pushes him and pushes him. Do you think that the opioid use of his dad has some effect that ultimately affected Tyler further on down the line in terms of emulating his father's behavior and drug abuse? Well, you know.
Well, listen, like he used his medicine to regulate his pain because he's got a bad knee. Right, it's kind of like when you see somebody do something and then you put your own spin on it and you take it further without any guidance, right? Like he just didn't ask for, didn't say, "Dad, I'm in pain, I need something," because that would have been the first step,
right?
Like, "I'm actually in pain, we should probably go to the doctor together." Didn't admit that he tore the thing up and was still working out after the fact, right?
Right.
So I'm not going to say that my having painkillers was a reason for his abuse of those painkillers. His mother also was an addict, and she wound up dying from a drug overdose. I think the most important aspect is that he never felt as if he could own where he was falling short or where he felt as if he was falling short. Mm-hmm. If he felt as if he could share these things with his father, whether it was the drug use, the actual pain in the shoulder, the actual pregnancy of his girlfriend, if any of those things at any point in time he could have been like, "Mom, Dad, I need help," we could have collectively found a solution. Anytime a child feels as if they can't share their problems and they have to shoulder them by themselves, they're not always going to make the best decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. That's my time.
Right.
Thank you.
And let me just say for the record, thanks to Sterling and Renee, and we do know each other, so they were really gracious and kind in the interview. I always love it when I know somebody. But Sterling K. Brown in this movie is such a menacing dad. He's very menacing, and he's a little scary. He is not like that dad on This Is Us. So be forewarned, I'm just letting you know ahead of time, he is not the This Is Us dad. But then I talked to the complete opposite. I talked to the kids. I talked to Alexa Demi, who meets a very interesting, has a very interesting arc in the film. Taylor Russell, who plays Kelvin's sister, and of course, Kelvin Harrison Jr. Take a listen.
Ladies!
Hi. Cool.
Thank you.
All right, so you two ladies are portraying really strong young women, right? You're the type of women that are able to make choices. You're making a choice for your boyfriend to be able to embody something that you didn't have a chance to do with your mom. You're making the choice to keep your kid with the parental, not supervision, but support of your parents, mm-hmm. right? So how did it feel to embody these types of characters where you're strong women making strong choices for yourself?
Yeah, I think these are the women we're surrounded by, ultimately. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think these are the type of people I see in my life, and I think, you know, it's good to see them represented in media, and I like that, you know, there's stories out there like this that are told by people who are really sensitive and aware that that women like us exist. And yeah, I think, you know, the more, yeah, I don't, I, yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, for me, I have a bit of a personal connection to my character, and I tapped into a lot of my mother's energy. had me very, very young, and a lot of people told her not to go through with it. And as scared as she was and as alone as she was, she made the choice to go through with it and have me. And so I think I just really connected to her in this film, and I felt her vulnerability and her strength and how scared she must have been. But it felt really good to play a character that stood up for what she wanted and what she believed.
Absolutely. I love that about your two characters. Mm-hmm. Now, Kelvin, my brother, you seem to gravitate toward these characters that have these ill-fated situations and have privilege attached to it. What is it about those types of characters that keeps drawing you back in again and again?
I think it's something that we just don't get to see very often, and I think it's kind of where we are right now. I think we've made a lot of brilliant accomplishments in our lives, and my parents definitely have to make a space for their children to kind of live a really great life. But that also comes with the traumas that kind of came before us, and that also comes with the world, the America we live in right now, and social media and all the expectations that have been thrusted on these boys. So I've been really interested in exploring that from different demographics and, you know, different just upbringings and different classes and trying to give all of these boys a chance to kind of say what they say, their piece at the end of the day. And they're saying the same thing. Let me be who I am and let me be a kid, you know? So that's been my journey.
Okay. And this is for all of you guys. You brought up social media. There's a lot of conversations happening via text message. Would you ever want somebody to break up with you via text message?
I haven't broken up with via text message.
Oh, have you broken up with somebody via text message?
No. I did it on FaceTime.
Oh, wow. That's messed up.
I know. I'm so sorry about it.
It's okay. All right. That's my time, y'all. Thank you.
I can't believe Kelvin said he broke up with somebody via FaceTime. And did you see how shameful he looked when he said it? Shame on you, Kelvin Harrison Jr. But you know, I love you, nephew. It's all good in the hood. All right. Let's get to... So, again... Let me just say that Waves is produced by A24. It's directed by Trey Edward Schultz, and it is going to be released again, another one, on November 15th. If y'all don't see any film that I talked about that's being released on November 15th, you better make your way to a theater to see this one, because this one is going to blow your mind. It took me days to recover from seeing this. It was so... I love a good movie. All right, so let's address some stuff in the chat room real fast before we get to the news. A lot of y'all are talking about Disney Plus and that you thought The Lady and the Tramp was going to be in theaters. No, The Lady and the Tramp, the live action version of The Lady and the Tramp, and all the Disney content, which includes the original animated version of the Lady and the Tramp, will now all live on Disney Plus. Disney Plus not only encompasses all the Disney content, all the Disney Plus content, they just bought FX. They will have Hulu, they have Nat Geo, and ESPN. They're having some specials, I think, online to buy it. It's a really good deal, actually, if you can do it, because it's a lot of channels. And when you break down what each one of those costs individually per month, per year, you might want to get it, but just know you might not ever leave your house again. I'm just saying, because that's kind of the life I'm living right now. All right, so let's get to a little Curvy Critic news. Yes, hey, all right. We got a report from GLAAD that says the LGBTQ representation on television is at an all-time high. They're saying that there is a significant increase in racial diversity of LGBTQ characters on broadcast and cables. On top of that, for the first time in the report's 24-year history, LGBTQ regular and recurring women on broadcast outnumbered LGBTQ men 53% to 47%, almost reaching gender parity. So, hey, all right for that. I also wanted to say that if Reese Witherspoon didn't have enough going on, my girl is producing yet another series. And this time it's called From Scratch, and it's going to be on Netflix. And Zoe Saldana is going to star in it and produce it too. Netflix has already ordered it, and it's based on Tim Belock's best-selling memoir. And it's going to be, it's a sweeping autobiographical romance that follows an American woman as she falls in love with a Sicilian man while studying abroad in Italy. Ooh, I'm all down for that one. I'm like, let's see that one yesterday. And last but not least, Star Wars is coming up at the end of the year. So, you know, it's the last chapter, the 8th chapter in the Star Wars trilogy. But one of the actors in that trilogy, John Boyega, is set to star in Netflix's Rebel Ridge, a thriller from Green Room writer Jeremy Saulnier. And Saulnier's 2013 crime drama, Green Room, is similar to his 2013 crime drama. I'm sorry. So that is it for the Curvy Critic News today, November 10th. At Black Hollywood Live. All right. Well, that will do it for another edition of the Curvy... Oops, I'm tearing up the studio. Another edition of the Curvy Critic here at Black Hollywood Live. Just as a reminder, Ford versus Ferrari, The Report, Scandalous, Charlie's Angels, and... Waves will all be opening this week on November 15th. The Lady and the Tramp will begin on 11/12, November 12th on Disney Plus. Also, check out my streaming picks real quick are American Son on Netflix starring Kerry Washington. It's a really riveting drama and she does an excellent job in it. And One Child Nation on Amazon. Next week for you guys, right before the holidays hit, I have an interview with Octavia Spencer. So when you guys said that you wanted to see me do more on-camera interviews, I do. Do my best to bring it to you. So thank you for the love. Thank you for the input. And I'm trying to get it to you. She has a show that's coming on Apple TV Plus called Truth Be Told. So I'll be speaking to the filmmakers and cast of that, including Octavia, some interviews with Frozen 2 and reviews of 21 Bridges, Holla, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and Dark Waters. You can catch me, your girl, Carla Renata, across all social media platforms. You can catch me right here at 5 o'clock every Sunday, giving you the latest and the greatest in the news. Right after this, you can catch me over at AfterBuzz TV doing the General Hospital After Show. And on Monday nights, I'll be back over at AfterBuzz TV doing the Dancing with the Stars After Show. I almost forgot what it was called. The Dancing with the Stars After Show. And of course, as an actress, you can always catch me on NBC on Thursday nights. I think it's Thursday nights. Yeah, Thursday nights on NBC on Superstore. So until the next time, you guys, love, peace, and hair grease, and I will see you real soon. Bye-bye.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.